This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and of course, some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. We welcome your call right now at 1-800-462-7413. 800-462-7413. And of course, along with your calls, some topics to talk over.
Yes, having a sister, having a brother, which one is better for your emotional health? And what role do siblings play on your emotions versus what parents play on your emotions?
Interesting stuff.
Especially if you're a teenager. Food allergies, they're on the rise. And what's causing them? Are we keeping our children too sterile and sanitary when they're kids? And is that what the root of the problem is?
Isn't that
interesting data.
What's our recipe?
Brenda's cranberry pumpkin muffins. If you like muffins, this is a great recipe that you will love to try.
Coming to us from Brenda Lee in Menominee, Michigan. Again, our toll-free number, 1-800-462-7413. That's 1-800-462-7413. And Zorba, let's welcome a listener now in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Fine. How can we help you?
Well, I am a lifelong asthmatic, and ever since I can remember, physicians have been warning me to stay away from dairy products, and in particular, milk. And I've heeded that advice because any time that I drink milk, it triggers a lot of asthma symptoms, tightness in my chest, overall general breathing difficulties. And I do like milk, especially in cereal in the morning, so I've been looking for alternatives, lactose-free milk, soy milk, that sort of thing. But the issue is, even when I drink the alternatives to milk, I still have the same asthma triggers. I still experience the same symptoms. So I'm wondering what the common thread is. Is there something else I can do maybe to not eat dry cereal in the morning?
Yeah, not eat dry cereal. You know, when you're a little, when I see babies in my office and they're putting dry little Cheerios in their mouth, it's because they like the taste of it. But I certainly wouldn't want to have dry cereal in the morning. And you're calling the state of Wisconsin. If there wasn't milk, the state would simply die. I mean, you know, after beer, it's the number one drink in the state, or maybe it is the number one drink. Well, let's talk about milk. First of all, there are a group of people that do not tolerate milk because they don't digest. The sugar. And generally, people of Northern Europe, European heritage have no trouble with it, whereas we'll look at Asians, African Americans have more trouble with milk. That's not what you're talking about. That's lactose intolerance. And that's where lactaid fits in, or lactose-reduced milk using lactase, which
is...
Well, is
milk bad for asthma?
Not at all. Not at all. And so I don't know where this goofy idea comes from. Now, there are intolerances to a lot of foods. So some people are intolerant for one food versus another, but it's really a myth that milk causes an increase in mucus. Now, there's some people who say, wait a minute, every time I drink milk, I have a lot of mucus. Well, okay, this, for you, it's an individual thing, but scientifically, it's never been proven in studies that milk actually causes mucus or triggers allergies. So I'm not sure why this is happening or if this is a psychological issue that you're preparing yourself for. That's kind of the question I have. What kind of symptoms do you have when you put milk in your cereal?
Typical asthma-like symptoms, you know, a little wheezy, catching when I breathe. I mean, and I've read studies, too, that say there's nothing to back up the whole relationship between mucus and milk, but it still feels that way. I don't know why. It just feels like I get phlegmy after I ingest it.
Well, there are a few suggestions that I have. First of all, if you want to really see if this is doing it to your asthma, take a puff of your short-acting inhalers such as Proventil and see whether or not you have the same symptoms. That's number one. Number two, there's no scientific basis for this actually triggering off an allergy. But we do know that psychologically, when we're concerned about allergies or asthma, that can trigger it off too. So I would question whether or not that's the case. And if not, if you find you simply can't tolerate milk, you have to pay attention to your body. That's sort of what I would recommend. So good luck to you. Let us know what happens.
Thanks, guys.
Sure. Thank you. We appreciate the call at 1-800-462-7413. Zorba, before we get back to the phones, interesting topic that you mentioned earlier on the positive effects of brotherhood and, in particular, sisterhood.
Yes, brotherhood and sisterhood. And especially we're talking about teens. So these are teenagers. Mm-hmm. Who has sort of a positive or, in some cases, a negative effect on you? Is it the parents? Is it the older brother or the older sister? Well, it turns out it's the older brother or the older sister, but it turns out the older sister is the one who basically often protects younger teens. I mean, they often keep them from feeling lonely or unloved or self-conscious or fearful. They often are, if you have an affectionate sibling who's older than you, they can mm-hmm. really be very, very helpful. And it appears the girls are much more likely to influence you than boys. But in either case, siblings do a lot of influence. So if your sibling says, your older brother or sister says, hey, you got to get over to grandma's house, you're much more likely to do it than if your parents say, your mom says, or your dad, hey, you got to get over to grandma and help grandma. So what does this mean to a parent who has children? Well, it means that telling the older sibling to try to influence the younger sibling can really make a difference, not just the parental influence, but mm-hmm. having the older sibling help.
Yeah, this says that siblings are twice as effective as parents in performing good deeds, helping you perform good deeds.
So what you're really looking at when you think about it is that even from a young age, I have four kids in my family, and from a young age, all my children begin to mimic what my older children are doing. Mm-hmm. So when they're really infants, you know, they want to do exactly the same type of activities. Well, this mimicry, if you will, or this learning from an older sibling obviously continues throughout life. And so if an older sibling is going out and volunteering, give you a great example, I had a patient in my office mm-hmm. Yesterday, in fact, and he was volunteering for they're called the Transplant Olympics. And these mm-hmm. are people who actually have had transplants, and they're going to engage in games. Mm-hmm. And I said, is it a lot of fun? He said, well, I have a lot of fun, and I got my younger brother to do it too.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Here it is. He's 20. His younger brother is 16. They're both engaging in positive, good, wholesome activities.
Yeah.
And I think that's very important, because doing wholesome activities is important for a family. It's clear that older siblings influence younger siblings. And of course, it can be the opposite way too.
Yeah. So discourage bad behavior if you're a parent, obviously.
That's right. And now, and both siblings count. The older yeah. one counts as much as the younger one.
Now, you and I are both only children.
That's right.
I don't know
about
you, but I see this as a good excuse for my bad behavior.
I love it, Tom.
800-462-7413. It's toll free. A line is open now for you. Let's welcome a listener now, Zorba, in Springfield, Missouri. Hi.
Hi there.
How can we help?
Well, I'm excited to be on your show, so thanks for taking my call.
We appreciate it.
I'm 30 years old, and I have some pretty persistent acne. Sometimes it's moderate, sometimes it's really bad, but I've literally tried just everything under the sun to get rid of it, short of like Accutane, and it's really frustrating because I have a professional job and out in public, and I've just got this horrible acne, and it's extremely embarrassing, and it's hard on my self-esteem, so I don't know what else to do. I'm kind of at my wit's end.
Yeah, that's one we can certainly understand that. Did you have this as a kid? Has this been going on for your whole life?
Yeah.
Let's go to the antibiotics, for instance. How long were you on the antibiotics, and you were on more than one kind or just one kind?
One kind, the mild kind, worked for a while, mm-hmm. probably a few months, and then it stopped working. So they started me on something else.
A different antibiotic.
Right, something okay. stronger. And that mm-hmm. had some other mm-hmm. negative side effects uh-huh. that I could not tolerate.
Mm-hmm. You mean GI side effects from your stomach, or what sort of side effects?
Feminine side effects.
mm-hmm. Okay. Let's go to the Accutane for a second. I mean, Accutane is a good drug. It has side effects, but it can be a remarkable drug. What are you worried about with Accutane? I mean, there are things to worry about, but what worries you about Accutane?
I've just heard terrible things about it, mm-hmm. that it's hard on your liver, or that it causes birth defects if you get
okay.
pregnant.
Okay, well, let's talk about that, because Accutane, I think, is a marvelous drug. I think it's a miracle when it works, and I think it's a dangerous drug at the same time. But let's look at Accutane. Yeah. Okay, so first of all, the birth defects. big issue, not a small issue. As a result, the feds have said the only doctors who can prescribe Accutane are doctors who take special training because of the birth defect issue. And there's special things that you have to do to make sure you do not get pregnant when you're on Accutane. You can keep from getting pregnant on Accutane. It's very simple. Don't have sex. Use birth control. Don't get pregnant. So that's easy to take care of. Let's look at the cholesterol issues. Accutane affects cholesterol. So you get a cholesterol at the beginning. You then measure the cholesterol. If it goes up, you may go on a cholesterol-lowering agent while you're on Accutane. You can deal with it. If you don't have a major family history of heart disease, that's not an issue. Liver. Okay, let's look at the liver. Liver function tests are done. Liver is often stressed when people drink alcohol and take other drugs. They check your liver at 2 weeks, and then they do regular checks. If liver function tests are normal, then you can continue with the Accutane. Most people do not have liver side effects. And if you do, when you stop the Accutane, it goes away. In other words, the stress on the liver, which a lot of drugs do, not just Accutane, there are a lot of drugs, among them cholesterol drugs, can stress the liver too. So we check the liver when we first give the drugs because there can be a stress. The major side effect that people complain about is dry skin and dry lips and dry mucous membranes. That's what they complain about. So they're always putting lip balm on their lips and they're licking their lips because the lips just become dry. The eyes become dry, so they're often putting eye drops in. And that's actually the most problematic side effects. So Accutane, though, can make a huge difference in your life. And it sounds to me like that's exactly what you should do.
Is it a permanent solution or is it something you have to do every couple of years?
I'll tell you something. For some people, it's permanent. And for some people, they have to repeat it every couple of years. But the people I probably send, maybe a dozen people a year for Accutane, and 80 to 90% of them, after they finish the treatment, come back and they go, my life has changed. Mm. My life has changed. So there are side effects. They're manageable. And I think if you measure that with what's going on in your life, you said you're 30. You're in your 30s?
Yes,
you know, and as you said, there are lots of things that affect it. If you were my child, my oldest child is 31. If you were my child, I would start you on Accutane.
Okay, well, I appreciate it. Thanks.
Yeah, that's what I would do. Good luck, and please let us know what happens.
Okay, I will.
Thanks so much for the call at 1-800-462-7413.
You know, when it comes to acne, sometimes we can be very cavalier about acne and the issues surrounding acne and the social issues surrounding acne for guys and for girls. I mean, but it's not just girls. It's also for guys.
Yeah.
And treating this effectively is so important. Like she said, her self-esteem is really bothered by this. And she's tried antibiotics. She's tried topicals. They work. Accutane, which is a vitamin A drug, which is a very, you know, as I said, it has dangers to it. On the other hand, there are dangers of not actually treating the acne. And I think finding a good physician and trying to find the solution can be a huge difference and make a difference in her life.
Mm-hmm. 800-462-7413. On we go to Whitney, Texas now. Hi.
Hi, gentlemen. How are you?
Fine. What's up?
Well, there are a couple of things. I'll give you a saying first. Time flies like an arrow, but fruit flies like a banana.
That's very good. That's Texas humor, right?
That's Texas humor. I wanted to check. I was thrilled to talk to you guys. You have helped guide and improve the quality of my life.
Well, thank you.
I wanted to ask, though, the question is, after incorporating most of your suggestions and getting into a healthy lifestyle, I'm slowly starting to lose weight without trying and eating all I want to. I look out for the processed foods. I don't eat out much, cook whole fresh foods and grains and a lot of water and not much, no sodas. I do drink a little bit of alcohol, but I have to do that with a bowl of chili once in a while. But anyway, I heard or read somewhere that there's a formula when you're looking at a package of food and you've got a low sodium and low sugar and you see grams of fiber and grams of carbohydrate is mostly what you're looking out for at this point. But I heard that you can offset a certain number of grams of sugar or calories by every gram of fiber in a food that it takes your body to digest it.
Well, let me give you the skinny on that. It's not that it gets offset. It's that there's a difference between carbohydrates, sugars, in a food that's processed and a food that's not processed. So foods that have fiber, we metabolize differently. And they have something called a low glycemic index. And the sugar doesn't shoot into our body quickly, but is slowly absorbed because of the fiber in the food. So when you're looking at fiber, it's not really the fiber is offset. It's a marker for a better food. So for instance, an apple, if you were to look at the ingredients in the apple and put in nutritional ingredients, is going to have more fiber than, we'll say, a Snickers, mm-hmm. Snickers bar. Mm-hmm. So fiber is a marker for more of a, if you would, a whole grain food. It's not really a whole grain because mm-hmm. it's not grain, but it's kind of like a whole grain food.
Or a more quality carbohydrate.
Absolutely. You hit it right in the head, a more quality carbohydrate. The theory now, and which I definitely ascribe to, we've got a huge rise in diabetes. And I think the reason we have the rise in diabetes is not just because of our obesity, but because of these high glycemic foods, these foods that essentially shoot sugar into our body, which means we've got to produce insulin right away. So high fructose corn syrup, perfect example of a glycemic food with a high glycemic index that is absolutely awful and has no fiber. You know, the same for sucrose. It's not great. Sugar is not great. But take a potato, take an apple, take a pear, take a peach. It has fiber. The sugar is absorbed more slowly. Our body has a chance to adjust to it, make the insulin. That's what you're looking for. So sugars plus fiber equal a better dish.
Very well. Thank you so much.
Take care. Thanks for your call.
We appreciate it. 800-462-7413. And before we get to the break, Zorba, let's log in to the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox for a couple of listener tips. Not too long ago, we were chatting about trying to swallow large fish oil pills. Well, it didn't take our listeners long to fill in our inbox with helpful hints on how to get those pesky pills down easier.
That is hysterical.
Rusty from College Station, Texas writes, "These days I can swallow a handful of vitamin pills, including two the size of the omega-3 pill. The secret is to fill your mouth with water first and then put the pills in and swallow."
Now, wait a second. Wait a second. If I fill my mouth with water, I open it out, it's going to dribble out of my mouth.
No, you just put your head down.
No, he said fill my mouth with water first. Am I supposed to pop them in the back of my mouth so they're floating in there?
Hey, ask Rusty.
Come on, Rusty.
It works fine. If you don't like water, here you go. Kathy from Decorah, Iowa has you covered. "I have trouble swallowing pills with water, but no problem at all if I chew a mouthful of food and right before swallowing, pop the pills into the mix and down they all go with the food." Really works slick.
Oh, yuck. I can just imagine taking an aspirin
tablet.
No, I'm interested in them. I have to tell you, I've never thought about swallowing the pills, but I'm interested. You know, you got to see what people do in the real world.
Of course, it might change the taste of the food a little for that one swallow.
Can you imagine I'm going to swallow it and chew? I don't think I'm going to do
that.
All right. But she does it.
There's one more. Maybe this will work for you. Finally, Jean from Madison, Wisconsin.
Oh, Madison, Wisconsin. She's got to have good advice.
Has this suggestion.
End of the earth, great place.
"Instead of throwing my head back to swallow the pill, I look down as I swallow. Looking down keeps the throat more open than if one's head is thrown back."
I'm trying to see.
I think that may work.
Try eating looking down. Next time you go,
no, you don't eat. You just swallow the pill looking down.
You know, I'm going to try that. That's
right.
Not a bad idea.
So don't
laugh
at it yet.
No, you know what?
Try it and then you.
I'm going to tell you. This is what I'm going to try. I'm going to fill my mouth with water and then I'm going to have a bunch of food in there. I'm going to look down and swallow my pills and keep. And you know what my goal is going to be?
Tell us which is right for the doc.
I'm going to try to keep from choking. That's what I'm going to try to do.
We always welcome your feedback. I do anyway. Send your tips to share. In an email to...
I do, too. Email to zorba@wpr.org. Keep those emails coming.
We have our recipe coming up, more of your calls, our medical myth buster, and some more interesting topics to talk over here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Callers are waiting, but a line is open for you at 800-462-7413. But right now, before our next call, it is, of course, recipe time. And for our recipe this week, we are happy to welcome from Menominee, Michigan, Brenda Lee. Brenda, hi.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
Fine, thanks. This is your cranberry pumpkin muffins recipe.
That's correct.
How did you come up with it?
Well, actually, I was thumbing through a magazine, and it's been about 20-some years ago. All I can remember is I did see it in a magazine. I love pumpkins. I love cranberries. Mm-hmm. It was very low-fat, and I thought, that's a recipe I need to try.
Mm-hmm. You like it? Your friends like it?
I never get tired of it.
You never get tired of it.
No?
You never get. Now, how did you actually start out with this? You know, cranberries and pumpkins and pumpkin. How'd you put this together? Something motivated you.
Well, I actually have loved cranberries my entire life. We do have some small cranberry bogs here in our area, and so at a very young age, I was out picking cranberries. I do a lot of picking of the wild berries, and just absolutely love cranberries. Mm-hmm. I like pumpkins, and I just thought the two sounded really good and unique together, so I thought I would try the recipe, and I tried it, and I love it. It's my favorite recipe.
And cranberries, so there are a lot of cranberries that are over there, too.
Cool. Well, actually, more north. You know, we do have a couple bogs over near the Sault Ste. Marie area. That's where I grew up, and that's where I do the picking of the cranberries there.
Sounds
in Alaska.
Wonderful. You know, in Alaska?
In Alaska, yes.
Now, wait a second. I don't think of cranberries. When I see Ocean Spray cranberry juice on television, they always show bogs in Wisconsin or Michigan or somewhere else. You mean Alaska's got a lot of cranberries?
Well, listen, I think Ocean Spray should actually go to Alaska and harvest their cranberries there. They're much smaller, they're more potent, and there's zillions of them. The hills are just filled with them.
So let me get this straight. There you are in Menominee, Michigan, saying, hey, I want to put this cranberry pumpkin muffin thing together. I think I'll fly up to Alaska.
Way. I was in Alaska. I knew the cranberries were good. We picked up there several years and just planned a trip around that season and spent a whole week picking cranberries. My girlfriend and I, we picked 60 pounds, and they freeze well and keep them for a long time. And
oh, my gosh. Let me get this straight. So I mean, people do plan their trips in Alaska often around when the salmon run. So you planned your trip when the cranberries were ripe.
Cranberries and moose hunting. Those are about the same time of the year.
Cranberries and moose hunting.
Right.
Got it together. Next.
And you can see Russia while you're
I didn't see Russia. I've seen lots of green and red.
Moving right along. Moving right along. Brenda's cranberry pumpkin muffin. So let's look at the ingredients. We start out with a cup of whole wheat flour. I love the fact that this has whole wheat. And then 2/3 of a cup of all-purpose flour. So that's really good. So you've got a mixture, so there's fiber in the whole wheat. Did you always do it with whole wheat?
Yes, absolutely. I've tried different types of whole wheat, and I found some were a little heavier than the other because they're actually a very moist muffin. But if you get a real stone-ground whole wheat, they don't work out as well.
Okay.
I use Pillsbury.
Okay, so you use a more refined whole wheat. And there really are differences because, and I know that when I bake bread, if I have a whole wheat flour that I use, it has too much fiber, then the bread doesn't rise.
That's correct.
A teaspoon of baking soda and a half teaspoon of baking powder. Teaspoon of baking soda, half teaspoon of baking powder. Half teaspoon of allspice, teaspoon of cinnamon, and that's where your seasonings come in, allspice and cinnamon. 1 cup of pumpkin, and make sure, I assume this is canned pumpkin that does not have anything in it when you buy it at the store, correct?
Correct. You can grow your own. That's what I do. So my muffin is a very wholesome muffin because I do grow my own pumpkin.
So when you grow your own, how do you prepare it?
Actually, what I do is I bake them, cut them in half and bake them at 350 for an hour, and then I let that cool down, and then I just portion that out 1 cup and freeze it.
You know something? I've made pumpkin because I make pumpkin soup, and I found it sort of arduous to do. But I scooped out the pumpkin when it was raw. I didn't cook it first.
Oh, it that's difficult. I don't know how you did that. That's a difficult
thing. I did it once. That's how I did it.
That's why you only did it once, because it's a very difficult thing to do.
It was once. Then I went to the can. That's exactly it. And it never occurred to me. You just taught me. Why didn't I bake it beforehand? I love public radio. I learn something every day. Every day by listening to the show. That's why I listen to the show every week.
Good.
Come rain or come shine. A quarter teaspoon of skim milk or carnation instant milk. Which one do you like? You like the carnation instant milk?
Not instant. I like to do the evaporated.
I'm sorry, evaporated milk. Yeah,
right.
My wife likes evaporated milk a lot. Quarter of a cup of skim milk or evaporated milk. 2 tablespoonfuls of oil. Any kind of veggie oil?
Actually, I've been most recently using olive oil in all my recipes that call for, you know, a small amount.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that would be interesting. Interesting taste. Cup of brown sugar, and I take it that's dark brown, regular brown sugar, not the light.
That's correct. And the one thing about the muffins with that brown sugar in, if you don't like them as sweet, you can reduce that. They are very sugary. They're very good, but... I use the cup because I figure I'm eating a wholesome and the sugar's not going to hurt me that much. But you could likely reduce that. You know, a lot of people do reduce sugar.
Well, I think the issue with sugar is choose where you want to eat your sugar.
Right.
So I think a dumb way to eat your sugar is with soda. I mean, you know, 12 ounces of soda or 12 teaspoons of sugar. So if I'm going to eat my sugar for the day, I'm going to have it in a muffin that I like.
Right.
1 egg white.
That's correct.
1 cup of cranberries. And then a cup of chopped nuts you can use, but optional. What kind of nuts do you like to use if you like
nuts? I like the walnuts.
Walnuts, cool.
But I don't always use the walnuts in there. I just sometimes do,
And that's it. With a lot of baking, you choose whether or not you're going to do nuts. Okay, so let's make it. Preheat the oven to 350 degrees. Then in a large mixing bowl, combine the flour, baking soda, baking powder, allspice, and cinnamon. Mix it well. In another bowl, add the pumpkin, milk, oil, sugar, and egg white. Beat that well. Then fold the cup of cranberries and nuts, if you're going to be using them, into the dry mixture. Next, fold the pumpkin mixture into the dry ingredients, blending only to combine well. Now, you can overmix this, I take it, like other muffin mixes.
Muffins.
I'll get it right.
It makes a very tough muffin anytime you're making muffins if you overbeat it. All you want to do is just fold it, make sure the flour's in there, and then, you know, don't overmix it.
I have
a friend that just beats the death out of everything, and it just doesn't turn out the same way.
Mm-hmm. That's the chef's tip. And I think one of the reasons, of course, is that you've got more air when you're just folding it in. Then place the paper muffin liners into muffin cups. Fill 2/3 of the way full because it's going to rise. Place in the oven and bake at 350 for about 35 minutes. It's serves 12. It's delicious. 231 calories per muffin. It's absolutely wonderful. It has a little bit of protein, about 8 to 10% of the protein that we have. It's got some good olive oil fat. I love this recipe. I know that our listeners are going to write for this. Brenda's Cranberry Pumpkin Muffins Dynamite.
And thank you so much, Brenda.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. And for sending us this winning recipe, Brenda gets a free copy of our cookbook, Heart Healthy, Low Fat, Guilt Free, and Tasty Recipes from the Kitchen of Zorba Pastor. And if you want to enter our recipe contest, it's easy. Just email your original low fat recipe to us at
zorba@wpr.org.
If you want a copy of today's recipe, visit our website at
ZorbaPastor.org. And while you're there, you can sign up for our weekly recipe podcast and search all of your favorite Zorba Pastor on Your Health recipes. That's ZorbaPastor.org.
+1 800 462 7413, our toll-free number. And a listener now, Zorba in Maryville, Tennessee. Hello.
Hi, guys.
How can we help you?
Well, I have a question about something strange, I think, that happened to me. I had always enjoyed almonds. It was one of my favorite nuts to snack on. And when I was about 50 years old, I was on a flight back from Hawaii, and they brought around a nut tray, and I started popping in the almonds. And immediately my throat and tongue started burning and swelling, and it seems like I had instantly become allergic to almonds. How unusual is that?
Yeah. Have you tried them again since?
Oh, I have. And I can tell if I get some cookies or a snack bar or something that has almond powder in it, I can even tell that that it's there.
The answer is it happens, and food allergies can be like that, where all of a sudden you're eating something and you develop an allergy to it. I'll never forget, several years ago, our best friends were over at the house, and I served Coco Saint-Jacques, and I had made this wonderful recipe, and then and we had it, and by the end of the meal, her face was swollen, and she was red, and and said, "What's going on?" And we found out it was an allergy to scallops, and so a couple of weeks later, she decided to try it again, and the same thing happened. She can eat all other seafood. She can't eat scallops. You can probably eat other nuts that have different proteins, but you'll not be able to eat almonds again.
That was my next question. Is I know that almonds have a lot of nutritional value. Is
they
there
do.
A second choice that maybe I could try?
Well, first of all, you can try the almonds periodically and see if it'll happen. But frankly, if you even notice something is made with almond powder, it sounds to me like you're highly allergic. All nuts have good nutritional value because they all have omega-3 fatty acids. So not peanuts, because peanuts are not a nut. They're a legume. But all the other nuts are good. So pecans are good. Nuts and seeds are really all good. So pecans are great that you could have those if you wanted to. Walnuts would also be another nut you can have. Pine nuts. Pretty much any kind of a nut would be fine to have. But I think I'd stay
are
away from
cashews
bananas.
Not as good
no,
as other nuts?
No, cashews are good. Don't you like cashews?
Yeah.
I love cashews.
Yeah.
They're delicious. I don't know why almonds got a better rap than cashews and other nuts. But the fact is, I just think of nuts together as being something that's good, nutritious, caloric dense. So you've got to limit what you have, but healthy for you. So you're probably not going to develop an allergy to other nuts, but be aware it could happen.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure. Appreciate the call. Thank you very much. 1-800-462-7413. On to St. Paul, Minnesota now. Hello.
Hello. I have managed to severely bruise my right leg with skydiving and whitewater rafting, and now when I drive in my car for any extended period of time, it becomes really numb, and I recently did about a 4,000-mile trip, and it has stayed numb for about a month afterwards, and I'm wondering, it's not diabetes and it's not back, because I've had that checked out, but I'm wondering if there's any suggestions or ideas you have.
Yeah, skydiving?
And whitewater rafting. I really bruised it up.
How often do you do these things?
Well, the skydiving was once and only. I won't do it again. But the whitewater rafting, canoeing, and kayaking, I do fairly often.
Well, I don't usually do this, but you don't sound like you're 19 years old. Can I ask your age?
65.
Yeah. Well, I guess you don't hold the record. Didn't George Bush one skydive?
George is doing it in his 80s.
Yeah.
Now, wait a minute. But Tom wants to skydive. This is something he's had a desire to do for years, isn't it, Tom?
I've thought about it on occasion.
Yeah,
it's not a burning desire.
Yeah. Well, tell him, was it fun? Should he do it?
It was more interesting than fun. When you're just falling free through the air, it feels like the earth is rushing up to you. But then when you pull the ripcord and you're kind of like floating around, that's fun because you feel, you imagine that you're feeling like a bird would feel.
You didn't do it with a guy holding you? Like?
Yes, I did.
Oh, you did, yeah.
Because I didn't go through all the, if you're going to do it yourself, you have to go through all this training. And I just wanted to jump.
Yeah, I would never do that. Not in a million years would I ever even think of it.
Well,
not in a million years.
Let's see if we can help her.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. I'm stuck on skydiving.
Yeah, me too.
This is pressure on a superficial nerve, most likely. That's what this sounds like. And what happens is our nerves are kind of funny things, and sometimes if we put pressure on them, they stop working for a while, and then they'll start to fire. And so we'll develop numbness and tingling. Sometimes we'll develop a sharp, lightning, lancinating pain if they're firing too much. And basically what happens is direct pressure will do it. So direct pressure, basically, in your car, you said you completed a 4,000-mile trip. And what happens is you pushed on a superficial nerve in some way. I'm not sure it was how you sat. But in the future, first of all, We'll talk about what you do in the future and then what I would recommend now. You're going to want to take some pillows with you in a car. And you're going to want to have hard pillows. They're car pillows, which is what they're called. And basically, you sit with one buttock cheek a little bit different than another one. And sometimes that'll do it because you're not putting pressure on the nerve. There's some way you're sitting in that car seat, which is pushing on that nerve. And you got to figure out which way you change your position to do that. So that would be the way to do it. Now, time is going to help this. Time will help it. There are medications that help if people have significant discomfort, gabapentin being the first one that comes to mind, which is an anti-epileptic drug which works in neuropathic pain. But that's really when people have pain and they have discomfort and they're not getting any better from it. This is most likely going to get better with time, but it can take months to resolve. It does not take a couple of weeks. It can take months to resolve.
All right. Excellent.
Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. 800-462-7413. Before the break, Zorba, we're going to need an opinion from Judge Zorba. Today's case comes to us from Amy, who needs your ruling on popcorn oil. She writes, I've been going back and forth between the internet, my mom, and my boyfriend on what the healthiest oil is when making popcorn on the stovetop. I know that coconut oil is used most often with popcorn for its flavor. However, I've heard immensely conflicting reports on the healthiness of it. I've also been hearing conflicting viewpoints on canola oil. Grapeseed oil, I think, is a good choice. However, it's expensive. What is your opinion?
Well, I don't like to. I think cooking with tropical oils, palm kernel oil or coconut oil, is not good for us. Mm-hmm. I think that tends to elevate the bad cholesterol. And there was a whole movement a number of years ago against the tropical oils. They've come back. And frankly, they're used. It's not necessarily flavor. It has to do with the cheapness of the oil and how hot it can actually get before it begins to smoke. So it's more the, if you will, the way the oil heats up and the way it smokes, it doesn't add much in the way of flavor to that. Canola oil is great. It's wholesome. It's a good oil. Any rap against canola oil is wrong. It's a very good oil, and it's probably the best oil to cook with. And rapeseed oil is also very good to cook with. So I'd sit with the canola or rapeseed oil, and I would stay away from the tropical oil like coconut oil.
Need Judge Zorba to pop open your lifestyle debate? Just send your case to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have some interesting research to talk over, and more of your calls, of course, our medical MythBuster 2, coming up here on Zorba Pasture on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Again, our toll-free number is 800-462-7413. But before our next call, a question, why are food allergies on the rise?
Well, this is a very important thing to ask. And it's not just food allergies that are on the rise, but when we look at it globally, there's an increase in a lot of different allergic things besides food allergies, autoimmune diseases, and they all may have one common final pathway, which is we're protecting our children too much. So let's look at food allergies. Mm-hmm. Food allergies, there are more and more food allergies are reported to doctors, to emergency rooms. These are not just the typical peanut allergy, but allergies to a wide variety of other foods. And there's an increase in asthma, and there's an increase in ulcerative colitis, and there's an increase in Crohn's disease. And the present theory is that our bodies were made to not be as sanitary as we have in our present society. We were made to be around bacteria and dirt and other animals, and we normally fight these by producing antibodies to that, and we have a different gut flora, and now that we live in such a sanitized environment, we're starting to fight ourselves. In other words, the antibodies that were made to fight invaders into the body or allergens are now basically fighting ourselves, and so we start to develop, if you will, allergic responses to a lot of different
things. Well, how are we avoiding childhood dirt and things more better now than we used to.
Well, because parents are being very, very careful with their children. They're making sure that their children play in sanitized environments. There was a study a number of years ago that compared children who basically grew up in farms and ate dirt, I mean, they were around dirt more, with children who lived in a New York City lifestyle, and discovered there was significantly more asthma, significantly more allergies in the children in New York City than the children in the country. And that's where the sanitary theory has come in, that we were made to have different gut bacteria, in our body and fight them off so you don't fight our bodies.
Yeah, my mother used to say when anybody, any of us kids or anybody had something that may have had a little something dirty on it, oh, don't worry, you have to eat a tablespoonful of dirt before you die.
Oh, well,
and she thought that it was a comfort. I thought, wait a minute, if I have a tablespoonful of dirt in my life, I'm going to die if it's a 35 or 45 or whatever.
So, but your mother was giving you advice. You know, she was saying a little bit of dirt isn't going to hurt you. And that's the answer. It's not just dirt. It's being around animals. It's being around plants. It's being around unsanitary things. So our body has a chance to basically fight them versus fighting ourselves. So I think when we look at this increase in food allergies, it's very important to introduce your children to a variety of foods early on. And it's also important to make sure that your children, even though they should be in a clean environment, they shouldn't be in an environment that is so sanitary that they don't come into contact with other bacteria.
800-462-7413. We welcome now Zorba, a listener in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Hello.
Hello.
What's up?
Well, my question today is about Devil's Club.
Devil's Club?
Yes, it's a plant that grows in the Pacific Northwest.
Okay.
And my question is that I'm type 1 diabetic, and I always hear about, you know, lots of different things that you can do for type 2 diabetes, of course, but type 1s, we just give ourselves insulin, you know, control our carb ratio, all that. But recently when we took this trip, our guide was talking about it, and he said that he was pretty sure there was research they were doing for the root of Devil's Club for type 1 diabetes, and I was wondering if you guys could give me information on that, and if so, what I could take.
So you mean that the Devil's Club would reduce the need for insulin or help your metabolism? What sort of information did you get?
Well, from what I was reading and some things that I found, it just said that there's not much information right now on it. And it's supposed to, from what they said, was help reduce the need for insulin.
Well, first of all, you know, as you know, as a type 1 diabetic, you need insulin every day because you don't make insulin. And, you know, without that, you know, you don't survive, you know, and that, so that's an important thing. But the carbohydrates that you eat can affect how much insulin that you need. So as you've noticed, you know, if you have a you know, high glycemic index, you know, meal, you know, where all of a sudden you have a bunch of sugar going through your body, you're going to need more insulin versus where you have something, you know, which is a complex carbohydrate. So I think that it's important to look at it from that point of view. Maybe the Devil's Club that you eat may affect the other food that you're eating at the same time. But there's not much research out there, as you said. You've looked at it. There's not much research on it. We do know, of course, and you know, that the types of carbs you eat and how much exercise you need affect your insulin. But I don't think that any plant at this time that we've discovered is going to get your pancreas to start producing insulin again.
Right. Oh, well, that's too bad. I was hoping it would be better information.
Yes, well, I was hoping, but you know what's the issue with things like Devil's Club and a lot of other herbs is that you have to get enough people together to actually be able to study something like that. And there's really not much research. Now, the question is, who wants to do the research? How do you fund it?
Yeah.
You know, if a pharmaceutical company can make money on it, they're going to fund it. But if not, generally the research doesn't get funded unless there's lots of good data on it. So, and there's not a lot of good data on Devil's Club. So at this point, I don't think there's much research on it.
All right. Well, I'll stick to the same old.
Good luck to you. And we'll let you know if I find anything on Devil's Club, I'll be sure to mention it.
All right. Thank you so much. so much.
Thanks. We appreciate the call. I'm thinking about doing research on this. You can't tell people with diabetes, half of you are not going to take your insulin for a long period of time, and the other half of you are going to use
devil's club. Well, yeah, you would never do that. But what you would do is you'd say, half are going to get devil's club, half are not. Let's see how much insulin you need. That's what you would do.
Oh, so you wouldn't totally take them off.
Yeah, you'd look at their blood sugar. How much do you need? Do you need less insulin when you're on Devil's Club? And then is that advantageous? And you could measure other things. Hmm. But yeah, you wouldn't stop their insulin at all. And that was sort of my point, is you don't stop your insulin, because if you stop your insulin, you don't survive.
Yeah. Well, time now, Zorba, for this week's Medical Myth Buster. We have a listener myth today from Joe in El Paso, Texas, that deals with black pepper. He writes, I heard on NPR that black pepper is harmful. Any truth to that? At the table, I use pepper in place of salt, but to a greater extent for the past 30-plus years.
Well, black pepper is not harmful. Black pepper is wonderful. Black pepper is great. In fact, black pepper, or any kind of pepper, any kind of hot sauce, there's some evidence it may increase metabolism. There's some evidence that people who eat hot, spicy foods actually eat fewer calories. There's one study that showed that if they add foods with hot peppers that contain capsaicin, that they had up to 100 or 200 fewer calories. So it was actually good for you. One of the great advantages of pepper is it may reduce sodium, because when you have food that's hot, you don't put as much salt on it. And we know that salt more and more is a problem in our society. So no, you heard it on public radio. Well, not everything on public radio is true, but black pepper is not bad for you as long as you can tolerate it, as long as it doesn't give you dyspepsia. And by the way, black pepper does not cause ulcers. Mm-hmm. It can cause some people have discomfort in their stomach, but there's no credible evidence that pepper causes ulcers. Mm-hmm.
Boy, I'm trying to wrap my head around not all things on public radio are true.
Hard to believe, isn't it? Hard to believe.
If you have a myth spicing up your life and you'd like us to bust it, send it to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
800-462-7413. To a listener now, Zorba, in Linwood, Washington. Hello.
Hello.
How can we help you?
Well, I have a question about platelets. I donate platelets at our local blood bank on a regular basis, and apparently I have a lot of platelets. When they set you up for a donation, they tell you to allocate at least 2 hours to do the donation. And when I do my donations, I can donate a double unit of platelets in 48 minutes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
So I have whenever I get a new technician there, they're always amazed at how short a time it takes and how many platelets I have, because it's over double what's considered normal.
So you rock when it comes to platelets. You rock.
Yeah, they like seeing me at the blood bank, because they call me like every 3 weeks to donate platelets.
How cool is that? It's wonderful that you do it, and it's great you got that. But your platelet count, is your platelet count too high?
Well, no. They don't say it's too high, but what my concern is that since I know that platelets have to do with blood clotting, and so my concern kind of is that going to put having such a high platelet count, does that put me at a higher risk of generating blood clots or like getting deep leg thrombosis when I'm flying? Or
the short answer is yes, but the long answer. Is actually perhaps not, because some people produce more platelets, but there's a realm of normal. In our particular lab, low normal I think is 150, and I don't remember what the higher level of normal is. And as long as you're within the normal range, you're okay. In other words, you're okay of actually doing it. And one of the things they do sometimes, if you're above the normal range, is they remove the platelets, which is what you're actually getting when you go to the Red Cross. But they're very, very, very picky at the Red Cross. And if you've got a blood abnormality, they often discuss it with your doctor or send you information. And you certainly can send your info to the doctor with your numbers and see. But no, if you're within the normal range, and it sounds to me like you're probably high normal, you're cool. When you go outside the normal range, that's a different issue. And then you can clot more, have excessive clotting, and you have to take medications to reduce those platelets.
Now, my other question is that since I'm donating on such a regular basis, and I guess actually my wife expressed this concern, is that you know, how, what is that going to do to my veins? Like if I have to go into a hospital for a procedure of some sort and they got to do an IV.
There are a few things. If they're having trouble, then you may be developing scar tissue, and that's one issue. But if you go to the hospital and they have to do a procedure, there are other veins that they could use, even if there were scar tissue there. But if you alternate arms and they don't have trouble getting a line, I think you're cool. And besides, you rock.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. You know, it's wonderful when people like this have a blood product such as platelets and they donate it because this saves lives. So I really commend you on doing this.
Yeah.
And thank you for the call. Zorba, before we get out of here for the week, it's time for another edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. Recently, we were talking about Teflon, and you mentioned that it was safe to cook with. We received a ton of emails taking you to task on that stance, especially on one issue in general, best summarized by this email from a listener named Lee. Lee writes, "If you go to any of the bird owner chat rooms, they all tell you that if you have pet birds, do not use Teflon pans. They have killed birds when they get hot. Even DuPont acknowledges this. I think this may be the proverbial test canary."
Wait a second. Yeah. In other words, if you have a Teflon pan in your house and you fry an egg, the birds die?
That's what it says here.
I'm not an expert on birds. And the canary dies. The canary dies in the mine because there's not enough oxygen. So I don't know if that would actually be the case. You know, we always, whenever I discuss anything with Teflon, there are always huge numbers of people who are anti-Teflon. And my thought is, don't use Teflon if you don't want to.
Yeah.
However, the feds have looked at Teflon and have looked at Teflon that is not scratched and said they believe that it's safe. And the reality is, I fit with that line. It's been tested. Now, I don't think it should be taken off the market, but I also think that I love America because we have a choice. Now,
if this is killing birds.
Yeah, if it's killing birds. Well, I don't know much about birds, and frankly, I guess I would have to question some of that data. But on the other hand, I'll get other emails from the bird people as whether that's the case. I don't think it's the proverbial canary in the mine. I think that there are issues that concern Teflon, and once again, the credible data doesn't show that Teflon, when used correctly, without scratches, that's the point, without scratches, is safe to use. Once it's scratched, that's a different issue.
Yeah. Well, if that's true about the bird thing, maybe Sylvester the cat should have done that instead of chasing Tweety around. Anyway, Zorba's
fried an egg in a Teflon pan.
Anyway, Zorba's not made of Teflon. Some of his mistakes do stick to him, so let us know for our next edition of Disagreeing with the Doc. Just send in your rebuttal to the show in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. WPR's version of Dr. Johnny Fever and Venus Flytrap, Adam Friedrich and Brad Kohlberg are the two hipsters responsible for getting this show on the air.
Hipsters they are.
Adam Friedrich is our executive producer. Our theme music by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll be with us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0814Z. More on healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, show archives, and listener feedback, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.